Welcome to Conversations in Cannabis, an MRR podcast. Today's episode features Steve Allen, CEO of the largest vertically integrated cannabis company in California, The Parent Company. This episode was recorded over the phone on February 15th, 2021.
Steve Allen, CEO of The Parent Company, easily the largest vertically integrated company in California, which is the largest adult use market in the world. Really appreciate you being willing to take the time to talk to me today.
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate you having me on. Excited to be here.
Of course. And, you know, obviously a lot of people love to hear people's origin stories coming to the cannabis industry, especially when it comes to chief executive officers of some of the coolest companies in the industry. Can you tell me a little bit about yourself and kind of where that original passion to kind of jump into the industry came from?
So when I look back at it, I've always been drawn to entrepreneurial activities. And so prior to joining Caliva, which then, you know, became the parent company through the SPAC transaction, I was actually at Silicon Valley Bank for about a decade, working through their analytics, their research, buy-side investment bank side of things, and, you know, kind of on the cutting edge of technology and life sciences and clean tech. And honestly, cannabis was kind of popping up on radar screens. It was interesting to me. Ironically, I was actually recruited into Silicon Valley Bank by Brendan Kennedy, now you know, privateer in Tilray. So maybe there's something to do with Silicon Valley Bank that produces cannabis entrepreneurs out of it. But really, I've always kind of seen new cutting edge industries as they've come to fruition. You know, really, not that cannabis is new and cutting edge, but obviously the regulated market is. I was originally approached by Caliva and honestly said no out of ignorance and you know, didn't know anything about cannabis outside of, you know, yeah, I remember, you know, buying some of that in high school and you know, every once in a while enjoying, but, you know, what are you talking about? This isn't a real business, a real industry. And I couldn't have been more woefully wrong in that kind of deduction. And fortunately, I guess I suffer from a bug of genuine curiosity. And so after that first conversation, I really started to look into it and learn a lot more. And over a period of about 6 to 9 months, really came to just realize how impactful of an industry this is and that, you know, how powerful the plant is. You know, it's not just the you know, Spicoli viewpoint of what you see on a Fast Times at Ridgemont High or something of that kind of thing. It was, you know, really that a lot of people use it, you know, in their daily lives and depend on it. And I think as I really wiped, as I call it the cannabis ignorance, sometimes I've called it the cannabis stupid, off my forehead, then I realized just how impactful of an industry this would be. I also realized how difficult it would be given, you know, a 50-year war on drugs and just say no and egg in a frying pan and whatnot to be able to battle out. But really saw this as you know, an incredible opportunity. And after learning more, you know, realized that opportunity, went back to Caliva and asked if I could still get the position they originally came to me with, which at the time was CFO of Caliva. And that's actually, I got brought into it, and I'll tell you, I'm a bit of a workaholic, but nothing has been as difficult and as hard as cannabis has been. It's not as easy as most believe, but it's also been the most fun and enjoyment I've ever had in my working career.
Well, and I got to ask, you know, being somebody that you kind of mentioned that you partake here and there, everybody loves to hear you know, executives that do partake. I got to know, what is your favorite way to consume, and do you have a particular strain that's kind of your go-to?
It's a good question. I would say that depending on the need state, I partake as needed. So you know, I definitely am a fan of the lotions that we have. Use that. I had unfortunately, a nasty foot surgery about 3 years ago that never fully recovered. I'm a huge fan of the gummies, especially some of the deli gummies we have for sleep. So that's been a great way to do it. But, you know, nothing beats when you're actually trying to relax whenever you can find that time to do it, even if it happens to be, you know, Thanksgiving afternoon. You know, nothing does beat the smell and taste of flour. And at the end of the day, you know, I'm a huge fan of some of the fresh flower vapes that we have out there. Really kind of a nice combination of a smooth draw, but still getting that same, you know, true terpene profile.
Well, and you guys have a breadth of different brands under your umbrella. You know, seeing how much data that you guys have, I'm curious, especially here in California, you know, are you guys seeing any type of trends that are currently happening as opposed to maybe, you know, when you first came into the industry? And what has been a surprise to you since jumping into the industry with maybe some of those trends?
Yeah, I think the biggest trends that we've seen that I would say are surprising, and I hesitate to use the word surprise, because I think we anticipated them, but I think just the breadth and scope of what's been happening with cannabis and its kind of broader acceptance. You know, some of the trends that we've seen are direct to consumer is just a tremendous growth in both female consumption, especially when you're looking at the, you know, 30 to 55 year old range. Really seen some tremendous growth there. And seen across all product categories. So it's not a, you know, a scenario of, oh, there's a particular product form factor or whatnot that's dominant. I think we've seen that regardless of sex, there seems to be an enjoyment of cannabis across all the different form factors, but seeing just the growth within that subset of consumers. I think the other area that was interesting, it was really interesting when I first joined, that I was not fully aware of was just the amount of consumption that was happening, you know, with our senior citizens, right? So mm-hmm. when you talk 55, 65, 75 and up, just realizing, you know, how many people are using the products, you know, really almost medicinal benefits of around pain and sleep, and really understanding that there's a fair amount of consumption that's happening. And I think just, as we've seen that grow, I think we've seen the societal acceptance grow as well. So it has shifted from, I think, purely what I had perceived it as incorrectly as an escapist, you know, relaxation type of thing to really better understanding where people are focused on. I think we've really seen that most recently in obviously the pandemic and the COVID crisis that we've been dealing with, which, you know, unbelievably is coming up on a year here in California, since we had the shutdowns. I think we're about a month away from that now. I'm really seeing the growth that happened in that particular time frame, and especially in that first 3 or 4 months, and we've seen it continue on. It really hasn't faded. Of where there was a focus on sleep and anxiety, you know, seeing particular strains and products, and just understanding the toll that this is. That the pandemic is having on society. It's not just what we're seeing and hearing, you know, out there in regards to jobs and health, but even the mental health component of you know, people being stuck at home or you know, having the kids do homeschooling and what that's like. I think it clearly has created an increased need for people to find ways to support themselves. And you know, I'm excited to see that there's growth in a, you know, non-addictive, non-synthetic, or organic opportunity to really be able to do that. And I think that's really been one of the most exciting things, to see that growth of cannabis consumption here over the last year, just really, I think, beginning to wipe away more and more of the stigma as more and more consumers go through the same journey that I did in joining Caliba, and really just, you know, wiping that ignorance away and really becoming self-educated, because it's difficult to get educated in this market, given the federal legality of it. And, you know, it's a higher burden on the companies and brands. It's a higher burden on the consumers to have to be able to learn that. But it's been very encouraging to see that growth over the last 11 months.
Well, and we've also seen, you know, speaking of, you know, people jumping into the industry, we've seen a lot of, you know, kind of celebrities deciding to take their first forays into the cannabis industry. You know, obviously, you have Seth Rogen up there in Canada with Houseplant, you know, down here, most recently, Jay-Z and your guys' portfolio with Monogram. I'm kind of curious, how did that collaboration come to fruition? And what has it been like, you know, working with a high-profile celebrity to launch a new brand?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. Look, when working with Sean Carter, Jay-Z, I mean, the reality is the man is a genius. You know, he actually approached us with the vision for Monogram. He had been looking and scouring throughout the cannabis industry to find a partner to build his vision for bringing dignity to cannabis and really creating the opportunities for high quality product really helped to elevate the name of cannabis, almost the same way that's, you know, happened across, you know, spirits or wine, right? You've seen kind of an elevation of understanding that's occurred over the last 20 or 30 years. And that same thing will happen here. And I think, you know, Mr. Carter saw himself as a catalyst for that, which is incredible. It demonstrates such foresight and thought into it. The fact that he had already been working on this for over a year before he even got introduced to Caliva at the time. And so we actually formed a partnership with Mr. Carter back in early 2019. And it was a joint venture. And really it was to launch this Monogram House of Brands product. So I know a lot of people have seen the Monogram launch that happened here back in December and maybe view it purely as a brand, but really it is just as Caliva had its House of Brands, Monogram is building a similar House of Brands just in the luxury space. And so that really creates a, you know, incredible opportunity to have a complementary set of products and SKUs that help to cover a wide gamut for consumers where they know that it's coming from a trusted source. And so, you know, Jay-Z working with him has been, incredible to watch. He's extremely hands-on. You know, he has dedicated team members that he's put on this that span the gamut of cannabis experience and business experience. You know, we've gone through an arduous strain selection process, you know, going through over 300 different strains to be able to pick out the right ones that match the profile that he and his team were looking for. He's been incredibly hands-on on, you know, development of the packaging and the look and feel, the messaging, the marketing branding side of it. It's fun to watch genius at action. To be honest, I've seen it in other spaces, like I said, in technology and life sciences, and now I'm seeing it in branding and product development. And been a delight. He is very rigorous in his process. He is very unaccepting of anything shy of extreme excellence. That can sometimes make it a little difficult to you know, meet product launch deadlines. But I also appreciate, understand, and support the idea that nothing beats a quality product. And if you don't have the best possible product, then why are you even in the industry?
Right. And I'm curious because I believe you guys launched with, you know, a series of pre-rolls and a series of actual whole flower. When you were doing the selection process, can you kind of walk us through what the naming process was? Because I kind of feel it almost has that, you know, like that Chanel number 99 kind of thing where you actually do a numbering system. Is that related directly to the strains that you were sampling? I'm kind of curious on that process.
Yeah, it is not a direct correlation of number one being the first strain or number three being the third strain or number 88 or 96 being associated. These are numbers that are actually selected by Jay-Z himself, and you know they are numbers that have meaning to him. And so on that process of it, it's been great to see his viewpoint of how these different strains can relate back to past history or fond memories or incredible opportunities, things that really have a personal experience. In fact, not sure if you had a chance to watch any of the episodes for the series called High Tales yet, but I'd highly encourage it. It's a fun series that really is taking, you know, a bunch of higher profile celebrities and artists who do partake in cannabis, who do love the cannabis plant, who are telling interesting stories while sampling the Monogram products, and, you know, telling about different ways cannabis has influenced their lives, their interesting times or memories they have. And, you know, I think it's invoking a bit of nostalgia, and that all of us, everybody has, you know, at least a handful of stories of, you know, a time when they consumed cannabis and either something memorable or funny or, you know, in some cases may not be a positive story, but at least it's something that you remember and share, and it sticks with you, right? And I think that's been a fun aspect of how this has been developed, is just really the authenticity around the plant and the impact that it's had on everybody's lives in totally different ways. But it's been incredible to see that itself. You know, in regards to the, you know, there's been a lot of questions also on this idea of, you know, medium and heavy and what these things mean, because you say, wait a minute, how can you have a flower that's 35% THC and it be a medium? And how can you have another one where it's 25% THC and it's a heavy, right? And really the again, I appreciated the approach that Jay and his team have taken, which really was around this concept of, you know, how does the cannabis feel to you? What kind of feeling is it bringing? So it's not necessarily just tying it to, you know, a THC percentage, which I think as consumers are coming to understand cannabis, you know, there's a more refinement to the understanding to realize that, you know, it's not just a simple thing of reading a number and understanding what the experience will be like. It's really being enveloped within that experience and understanding it may come in different ways despite whatever that number that stuck to it. And so again, what we most appreciate about Jay is his true investment in bringing dignity to cannabis. And we think this is all part of it, right? It's all part of not making this necessarily an inside baseball. Oh, do you understand what all these numbers mean? Do you understand what, you know, that this strain name means that it was crossbred with these three different plants? And, you know, no, it's actually trying to make it a little more approachable in the process and helping individuals that way. So really, I think a refreshing approach to cannabis that helps to expand the scope out to a broader set of consumers.
And when you're looking at the product offerings from Monogram, are you guys looking at possible expansion into other product categories beyond pre-roll and flower? What's kind of the future rollout for Monogram, in your opinion?
Yeah, so it's not even in my opinion, it's product roadmap. So from a product perspective, yes, they're absolutely. This again was an initiation. I think there was a certain authenticity to sticking with these SKUs kind of as the initial, these products as the initial component of it. I mean, flower being flower, it's the original way it was, you know, consumed. And, there's an art form to rolling a joint, right? And the reality is, I think anyone who's tried it and failed knows how difficult it can be at times. And you know, those who have mastered it, you know, DeAndre, who you know, Jay brought to us specifically and, you know, has taught all of our rollers, you know, how to hand roll. He goes through the quality specifications himself. He promotes and demotes people off of the team that are doing the hand rolls. You know, the reality is there is something magical about having a perfectly rolled joint. And you know, that's really what we're trying to capture within this. Again, I think a little bit of a throwback and nostalgia component to it. But that being said, we also know and understand, and Jay knows and understands that there are different consumer preferences. And while this may be a preference for some, and it's authentic to the Monogram side as you see a rollout of more brands underneath Monogram. So again, premium and ultra premium brands, you will see additional form factors that are coming to play. So it will not just be inhalable products, but you will see sets of ingestible consumable products as well.
Now, you guys clearly being the largest vertically integrated company in the state, are you guys looking at all, outside of California? And if so, what markets and why are those focuses for you?
Yeah, no, you bring up a great point, which is, yes, we may be the largest player in California, definitely the largest publicly traded player in California. The reality is California itself as a market has gone through its own kind of typical hype cycle, a little boom and bust, a little, green rush, probably a little reminiscent of the dot-com era, right, where back in 17, 18, everyone got excited. And I think there's a little bit of fragmentation in regards to where the capital went. And I think that itself has turned into, a fragmented state. We also have to remember, the industry in California, while we all talk about a regulated marketplace, and that regulated marketplace, it really has only been in existence since 2018. Prior to that, the 22 years before, in the medical market, really wasn't medical, to be candid. It was just a way that you could buy and sell cannabis without having, a criminal offense associated, which unfortunately has not been the case for so many, and I think has been another area that Jay and team have been focused on in really trying to right some of those wrongs as we look at it and understand at what's taking place in the market out there. But when we think about California, California itself suffers from a massive access and awareness problem. We if you just think about dispensaries per capita that are open, we're 3 years into legalized, regulated recreational cannabis, and we're on par with Florida, right, for dispensaries per capita, which is a medical-only state, right? And it's like, wait a minute, like there's an access problem. We've seen an acceleration recently, but, the reality is almost 60% of Californians voted in favor of legalized cannabis in November of 2016, yet right before going into the pandemic, because I know that obviously has thrown off a lot of activity, a lot of businesses, a lot of everything in society. But if we just wanted to take a window of time before the pandemic hit, January of 2020, you had about 70% of cities and counties in California that had no program in place, which meant they couldn't have a dispensary. And just incredible to think about the fact that you could have this kind of almost inverted correlation here. Wait a minute. People voted in favor of it, yet the programs aren't being put in place. I think a silver lining to a COVID cloud has been that cannabis was deemed essential by the governor, which, and not just the governor in California, but governors across the country, which I think really shows a lot of the forward thinking of some of the leading edge politicians out there. But then you also saw, through this time period, more people using it and understanding the power of the plant. And so we saw some of that begin to develop. So we're starting to now see that, translate into, the local level municipalities putting together programs. And so we saw 31 cities and counties pass programs here in this past election in November of 2020. There's others that are working through development agreements. So we really start to see the beginnings of the access problem being solved. But, you also have markets like Los Angeles where, unfortunately, their program was hit road bumps. I think it was, they did an incredible job of focusing on a social equity program. I think the heart and soul of the program was absolutely in the right place. And unfortunately, the execution of it has resulted in, quite a few lawsuits from people who are disenfranchised by the process. And unfortunately, that's handicapped a lot of people because now you had, 100 and now upwards of 200 license awardees who have been unable to actually open their businesses, and you're going on 18 months of that kind of waiting. Well, hopefully these bottlenecks will get moved on and move past so we can continue to solve that access problem. There's also the awareness problem, which is you can't really market, right? I mean, it's difficult. I can't go. This last weekend, I couldn't buy a Super Bowl ad, not that I would be able to afford it. I couldn't buy a Super Bowl ad, right, to tell people about it. I can't buy traditional media ads. I can't go on Facebook or Google or any of that, right? So you essentially are stuck with billboards, which even that got more restrictive when you look at it, most recently with it now being banned on interstate roads. And so to find out about information, people have to go either through, folks such as yourself who are helping to kind of bring cannabis and marijuana to the forefront and help understanding, or frankly, it's got to come from influencers, right? People who do help set the tone and lead societal change. And that's, again, part of the relationship that we have here blossoming with Rock Nation is around really helping to get that messaging out there. When we talk about social change, it's social change across cannabis acceptance. It's social change across social justice. It's social change across social equity. So really key opportunities, I think, for us to amplify the messaging and get it out to a broader audience and be able to build upon that. And so California is our central area of focus because at the end of the day, it is still highly fragmented. Consumers still can't get the products that they need, and we need to help solve that. And so we are laser focused on that. That being said, we do fully expect that there'll be regulatory changes. We do also strongly believe that the best of the best, brands come out of a combination of either California or New York. And so likely where you will see most of our next activity take place will be in that tri-state area, which, obviously happens to be the original home of Jay-Z and Rock Nation, and just works well to be able to pursue those geographic areas where there's already naturally the strongest influence from such a wonderful set of partners that we have.
And they're looking to legalize across that tri-state area for recreational use, so that's going to be an excellent market to enter into. I am curious, now that we do have a democratically controlled Congress, a democratically controlled Senate, as well as White House, are you hopeful for possible legislative change at the federal level in the next, say, 3 to 5 years? And if so, what do you think that could look like?
I'm always hopeful. I never build a business strategy on hope, but always hopeful. I think the reality is we know we've passed the tipping point of federal legalization for cannabis. I mean, the UN on a recommendation from the World Health Organization descheduled cannabis. I mean, it's just a matter of time as to when it happens is the question, right? So it's no longer if, it's when. I've never made a career, nor ever will make a career on betting on politicians. Whether that's them making logical decisions or not around some of this, I feel like there's a sea change of it. I mean, when I typically think about what needs to happen when you're talking about a scenario such as ending prohibition of cannabis, right? You really have to have three legs of that stool. You have to have a societal leg, which is the society accept and want that change, right? And we've seen this happen time and time again over the centuries, right? Then there is the economic leg, right? Is there businesses that will help to support and grow what that industry needs to look like and feel like so that the consumers or participants within that industry have viable opportunities to create wealth and jobs and taxes, and really at the end of the day, there still is a money component to everything. And then there's that third leg, which is the political will, right? And I think, we've seen the first two legs of that stool. We've seen societal change over a period of time. We've seen that lead to growth in of robust industries, over really the past 8 years or so. And now we're starting to see, as both of those grow stronger, the political will is starting to be there to be able to do it. We know that there's a lot of complexity to being able to take something that's been federal legal for so long and to shift that over. And, you know, I'm hopeful that it'll be a well thought out process. I'm hopeful it's a process that the politicians will seek the advice of those who've been touting for societal change on it, and those who are building, you know, the foundational businesses that'll, you know, support multiple $100 billion global market. And so I believe we'll go there. I believe we're headed that direction. I also believe that there's, you know, a probability, if I'm trying to look at it, that it'll be incremental steps, right? That we'll start to see something prior to the Justice Department. Then we'll probably see that follow up something out of the congressional houses, and then move down that line of due process within the government structure that we have today. I do think we'll continue to see more and more states embrace it while they're waiting for a federal change. I think we'll start to see some innovation out of some of the newer states as to how they get their programs running up faster. I think they've learned the lessons from, you know, watching the Colorados and the Illinois and the Michigans and Floridas, you know, build up their programs and just how long it takes to build those programs. So I am hopeful that we'll see some of that. But at the end of the day, I also look at the parent company, and the reality is we've got a tremendous opportunity in front of us in California alone, right? A something that helps us to build to, you know, a $10 billion plus company just here, right? And then you throw in the opportunity that exists nationally and then globally as those walls come down and those opportunities, you know, come to fruition. Then we see, you know, exponential opportunities for growth there. So, you know, we'll always be building, you know, for optionality, always building for long-term endurance and strength and foundation to be able to do that. But we also understand that we don't control the political winds of change. We, like so many others, just ride those waves, and we do the best that we can to make sure that those are headed in the correct direction, and that those will be implemented in a way that's, you know, fair and just and dignified.
Well, and you guys have been riding that wave like a championship surfer, definitely crushing it here in California. I got to ask, you know, being that this year seems to be your guys' year, what's coming up next for you guys?
Yeah, I mean, I think the reality out of what we've just gone through is, you know, it was a de-SPACing transaction, which basically brings together, you know, a pool of capital. In this case, it was, you know, in excess of $380 million, which is an incredible supply of capital to help go pursue both organic and inorganic opportunities. You know, we're busy integrating the three companies that were brought together as well with that pool of capital. You know, we're working feverishly days, nights, and weekends to really bring that integration together. And so you'll see some organic growth off of that. You'll see some new products that are coming out here, especially, and we've discussed Monogram, our premium tier, but you'll start to see in Deli and Fun Uncle some of our value tier product lines coming out to really make sure we're covering the entire scope of shelf from value up through premium and what people need to be able to achieve that. And so you'll see those products. And then I think what you'll start to see here probably in Q2 and as we get a little bit past this SPAC transaction, where we do have a period of time where we have a little quiet period moment. As you see us get past that 90 days, you'll start to hear a little bit more on the activity around some acquisitions that we're going through the diligence on right now and hopeful that they will be able to join the parent company family and really, like you said, ride that wave of opportunity. We do believe that the reality in cannabis being a highly regulated industry is that there are going to end up being larger players that are most successful in it. And we're really trying to create a foundation, a solid vertically integrated platform that other companies across the entire spectrum can plug into, either as partners and suppliers, or you know, being fully brought into the family through acquisitions to really help continue to grow the business and grow with cannabis as it will become one of the largest industries in the United States.
We would like to thank Steve for his time and being on today's episode. You can find out more about the parent company by visiting them online at www.theparent.co. Stay tuned to the next episode here on Conversations in Cannabis, an MRR podcast.